Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
What's up, all? Welcome in to Sal Sports Live. Thank you for joining me here. Also on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. Of course, we do this on the internet, on live, web stream, however you want to call it, every Thursday night, 7:30. But tonight, we're on a little bit earlier, 7 o'clock tonight. There's a couple of reasons for that. I got a couple of things going on myself. But actually, part of the other reason is because my guest tonight, who's supposed to join me here in just a couple of minutes, Greg Bell out of Seattle, because the Seahawks are on Pacific time, of course, and because they're out west, they are going to be having, you know, they have a different schedule than what you might see, you know, in Buffalo. So I want to make sure I get Greg because he's got to do some media stuff out there. So it kind of worked out that way. And then they have Seahawks media coming up at 4:30 Pacific and 7:30 Eastern time. So if you're coming along here on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast right now, and you're like, hey, why is Sal on at 7 o'clock instead of 7:30? That's why. And if you're listening on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast that I've already kind of turned around into the audio, thank you very much for that. And we're going to have plenty of Seahawks and Bills talk for you because this is a big game for the Buffalo Bills. It's a big game for Seattle too, I would say, because, you know, they're trying to stay atop the NFC. They're trying to stay with the number one seed. And in fact, right now, if you look at the NFC, the Seahawks have the number one seed. They would get the bye. The Bills actually are in the number three seed right now. It would be Pittsburgh number one, Kansas City number two, the Bills number three. If the season ended today, and of course it doesn't, the Bills would be hosting the Indianapolis Colts as far as on the first playoff round. So a lot of football to be played. This is game number nine. We are eight games into a season here for the Buffalo Bills. They have a bye week in a couple weeks. They have a couple NFC West opponents here. You got the Seahawks, and then of course you got the Arizona Cardinals coming up next week out in Arizona. For the Bills to get this one, there are a lot of things that they have to do right. This is not an insurmountable opponent, but it's a very, very tough opponent, of course. Anytime you have a team coming in at 6-1, you got Russell Wilson playing at an MVP-type level right now for the Seattle Seahawks. You have DK Metcalf. You have Tyler Lockett. I mean, pick your poison here as far as who's going to beat you throwing the ball. Here, pick your poison. Pick your, you know, player or whatever scheme that you want to employ to be able to stop the Chiefs. I said the Chiefs for a reason because I feel like the Bills might actually go back to that kind of game plan on defense, which is keep everything in front of you. Don't get beat deep. The Seahawks would love to go over the top of the Bills. They'd love to throw it to DK Metcalf. They'd love to throw it to Tyler Lockett. And then DK Metcalf, of course, is also really, really tough with the ball in his hands. Once he catches the ball, he's tough to bring down. The Bills have to tackle this week. And, yes, Joe's cleaning lady, as it says right there, says tackle. There you go. I'll give you your props there, Joe, on the screen, even though, yeah, Joey's cleaning lady. All right. Thanks, Joey. I appreciate it. See, I don't know whether to put some of you people on the screen or not with some of your screen names, but that was pretty good. But he's right. He's right. You have to be able to wrap up. You have to be able to tackle. As Chris says, this could be a shootout. There's Chris right there. Chris Spencer, this could be a shootout. I agree. This could be a game that we see into the 30s for both teams. The over-under right now is 57.5. You know, that's actually, if it stays right there, that's the largest over-under in the history of a Buffalo Bills game, because that was the over-under for the Chiefs game, but by the time it got to game time, it actually went down because of weather and things like that. The Bills have very rarely in their history had games that climbed into the even mid-50s as far as over-unders. And this one right now at 57 or 57.5, I think, depending on exactly, you know, where you're looking. So, all right. Yep. I want to make sure I send, I'm going to get a message here from Greg, from Bell Greg, and Greg Bell. That's his name, actually. So I will send him, I have to resend him the link here, and now he's got it. Okay. He's going to be joining me soon. Sorry. We're doing live stream here, and Greg's going to be joining me here in just a second. So I'll get with him. All right. So the other thing I want to tell you though, about this game, I went and I did actually did some stats and looked at the big pass plays that the Seahawks have had and how the Bills have defended some things this year. This is pretty crazy to think about. The Seahawks actually are second in the NFL with six pass plays of 40 yards or more, six of them. The Bills lead the NFL with only allowing one pass play of 40 yards or more. And that was that one pass play, Jamison Crowder, week one, catching it right off the line of scrimmage, breaking up a couple tackles. Tremaine Edmonds gets hurt on the play. He goes for a touchdown. Other than that, the Bills have not allowed one pass play this entire season of over 40 yards. So we know that the Seahawks are going to want to go to the big play. But we also know the calling card of a Sean McDermott defense and a Leslie Frazier defense has been not allowing that big play. And I'll go back to the Kansas City game a few weeks ago. The Bills did a great job of taking away Tyreek Hill. They did a great job of forcing Patrick Mahomes to just kind of take what they gave him. He only threw for 220-something yards. Yes, he was efficient, but he didn't have a Mahomes-type game. But what did the Seahawks do? I'm sorry, what did the Chiefs do? They ran all over the Bills because the Bills invited them. I would think here the Bills would choose, if they could, to have the Seahawks run as much as possible and not have Russ cook, so to speak, not have Russell Wilson throw to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and beat them that way. I think that's what the chess match is going to be here between these two teams. So right now I'm going to bring in my special guest, and it is Greg Bell. Greg joins me from out in Tacoma, out in the Seattle region, and he covers the Seahawks. So we appreciate him joining the show. Greg, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you doing this tonight.
Hi, Sal. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the weather I'm about to fly into, by the way.
No problem.
I went to school in New York State. I know what it can be like in November. I have friends in Frewsburg. No way. It's gonna be 65 and sunny.
Okay, so wait a minute. Wait, let's talk about this for a second. First of all, where did you go to school?
I went to West Point Military Academy.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your service. Thank you very much. And then also Frewsburg. That's interesting. So that's where Shane Conlon went to high school.
That's right.
Obviously, that's he went. Right. He became a Buffalo Bill.
The Webb family down in Lake Chautauqua and Frewsburg. Yeah. We are friends very much with Shane Conlon. I went to school with a guy who knows him very well.
Very nice. So I'll tell you my own personal experience with Frewsburg. My junior year in high school, we had to drive 2 hours down there and actually won against them I played at the stadium where the Bills play now, which was then Rich Stadium. That was the game to get there. That was the semifinal to get to the championship, which was pretty cool. So I'm very familiar with it. And I appreciate you doing that. And by the way, yes, you did hit the Buffalo November weather lottery. It's pretty amazing.
I'll tell you, Sal, the Seahawks are pretty relieved about it. Carroll's mentioned it a couple times, how fortunate they are. He's, of course, coached there times. He was a Bills assistant way back when, starting his NFL career. So he knows what it can be there.
There's no doubt. Yeah, 1984, they were 2-14. On the conference call, I asked him about that. I said, what do you remember about that? He said, I remember it was short-lived. We were horrible. By the way, interestingly enough, they had a guy named Greg Bell on the team.
A running back from Notre Dame, and then playing for the Rams after the Bills. That's right.
He was involved in the Bennett trade. By the way, we still believe in fall. This is a shirt, a hoodie that our morning show host Jeremy White, he's a part of. Fall is elite in there, Buffalo, right there. If you can see that right there, we love showing that off because it goes to a great cause. So I want to show it off and wear it on the program here tonight.
Thank you for doing that. Fall is elite, and winter is something else. There, I know.
Yeah, no kidding, no doubt. All right, so let's get into the good with Seattle first, and I'll get to some ways that maybe there might be concern over there, but. Russell Wilson, I mean, people want him to cook. He is cooking this year, Greg. Tell us what's made him so special, probably the MVP right now of the league.
Well, you're right, Sal. Each week he's been knocking on the door of Peyton Manning and or Tom Brady's record for most touchdowns through X number of games. He needs 4 touchdowns Sunday to tie Brady's record. He's got 26 now through 7 games. they're throwing way more on first down than they used to, Sal. This team used to just be Pete Carroll style, would be to grind it out with Marshawn Lynch type of running game and even Chris Carson the previous years, and then rely on their defense and field position. Well, they obviously can't rely on their defense anymore. And so they are having Wilson throw earlier on first downs. They're beyond the number of they've already passed the half as many first down throws as they had the entire season last year, and they've only played seven games. So they're way ahead of their pace throwing early and downs, and it's worked. And their offensive line is much improved, Sal, over the previous years. They let Jermaine Ifedi's contract end, the former first-round pick at right tackle. They brought in Brandon Webb, Bills fans remember, played for the Jets. And Webb is just more athletic and quicker outside to stop edge rushers. And Russell Wilson doesn't have a front-side pass rusher in his face as soon as he drops back like he did for so many years before when Ifedi was their right tackle. Ethan Posick has moved from guard and tackle to center to replace Justin Britt, and that has worked out swimmingly for them. They had signed B.J. Finney from the Steelers thinking he was going to be the new center, but Posick beat him out, and so much so that Finney never played, and they traded him to Cincinnati in the Carlos Dunlap deal last week. Mm. Then they have a new right guard. The entire right side of their line is new. Damian Lewis, rookie third-round pick from LSU, day one of training camp has been the starter, and he's been solid. So their pass protection is better, which is why Wilson is throwing on time and allowing Metcalf and Lockett and David Moore to get open longer in patterns. It used to be just street ball improv football when Wilson threw it when he didn't have pass protection, and now he's got better protection more often.
He's also, I believe, fourth in the league in yards per attempt. You know, he's up there, whatever it is. But he's throwing the ball deep. They like to strike. They like to go downfield and stretch the field. You know, which guy is it, though? Is it DK? Is it Tyler Lockett? Is it pick whichever one you want? Talk about their skill sets a little bit for me, Greg, because they seem to complement each other really well.
Yeah, DK Metcalf, there's nobody in the league that's 6'4", 230, runs a 4.3 and has a 44-inch vertical leap. There's not. And that really is what it comes down to. Wilson can throw it up knowing Metcalf is going to get the ball physically over defensive backs in every one-on-one matchup. Wilson is a very exquisite, accurate thrower deep. His balls are right on to the hands, away from coverage. He is very good at deep balls. He just hasn't always had the time to throw those, but now he has. Mm-hmm. Metcalf is just a physical mismatch in Seattle's favor. Of course, he had the neck injury at Ole Miss, and a lot of teams thought he wasn't an NFL-ready receiver. He had a college doctor tell him he'd never play football again a few months before the draft. Mm-hmm. Sharks traded back into the second round and drafted him, and everyone said he was a one-trick go-route runner only in Mississippi, and he can run a route tree. They were really surprised at how polished he was from day one as a route runner. He's all that and more. It will not surprise me if he's an all-pro, if not this year or next year. He's tied with Lockett in touchdown catches with 7. He's fourth in the league in yards per catch, second in yards per game. He's the home run threat that Russell Wilson trusts for. They spent time in Mexico this offseason. Wilson taught him how to swim. They became like brothers. He's still only 22. Having said all of that, Sal, the most dangerous part of Tyler Lockett's game is the improvisational. When the plays break down, he is uncanny at knowing where Wilson's going to go with the ball, when he's going to throw it. Defenders don't know it's coming. He breaks off routes, and Wilson knows where he's running, and Lockett knows where the ball's going. Metcalf is the on-time scheduled receiver. Lockett is when the all-hell-breaks-loose receiver. And it still happens occasionally that all-hell-breaks-loose with Seattle's offensive line. Lockett is almost uncoverable when it is improv extended plays.
Tell me about the running back situation as far as injuries and who's going to be available and what they bring to the table Sunday.
Well, so far, the top three running backs are still hurt. I was out of practice about a half hour ago, and the top three running backs remain hurt. Travis Homer is the number three. He's usually the third down blocking, pass catching back. A chance to come back, bruised knee. I don't think Chris Carson's playing, sprained foot. He didn't play last week. He hasn't been on the practice field for 2.5 weeks. I don't think Carlos Hyde is playing because of a hamstring injury. He missed the last week and the week before. They are probably just going to have Travis Homer and DJ Dallas, the rookie fourth-round pick from Miami, who got his first start and 2 touchdowns last week, first 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Because of that, off the top of your question, and I heard you saying how the Bills can beat Seattle, because of that, I don't expect Seattle to have a run as much in the game plan. They don't intend – Pete Carroll wants to run. He can't run right now. He doesn't have the backs, and he's got a quarterback at the top of the league in throwing and a line that's pass protecting. They'll run if they have to. DJ Dallas had 18 carries last week after they got the lead against San Francisco. But I expect this to be another game that they're throwing it all over the lot, especially with the weather being as well as it is.
So, you know, as I was saying earlier, a couple of things. The Bills, when they played the Kansas City Chiefs, that's what they did. They basically said, hey, we're going to take away Tyreek Hill. We're going to take away the big play. And they did a good job of that. I mean, Mahomes only threw for 225, but the Seahawks just ran all – I mean, sorry, the Chiefs just ran all over them because of that. The other thing is the Bills have been very, very good. They're usually one or two in the league under McDermott and Frazier of not allowing the big play. And they've only allowed one pass play the entire season over 40 yards, and that was a short catch and a long run that actually happened. So if they employ that strategy, given what you just said about the run game, are the Seahawks equipped to be patient, take what's underneath, and just kind of go down the field methodically?
And that's where Lockett can beat you. Yes, I think so. Buffalo, I know the run defense hasn't been as you mentioned the Kansas City game. I just don't think Seattle has the horses in the run game right now to challenge that. If Carson was available and playing, I'd say that, yes, a large part of the game plan would be to run. They don't trust DJ Dallas down in and down out in key situations. There was a 3rd-and-2 play in Arizona with Carlos Hyde that would have won the game in regulation if he'd gotten 2 yards. And the rookie right guard I just glowed about, Damian Lewis, went the wrong way. They are proven so far that they're more consistent pass blocking. And, right. And when they need to make a play, they're going to do it in the air, and especially without Carson and without Hyde. I hear you with how Buffalo's game plan should be, and I expect the same thing. I expect the Seattle to throw anyway.
Yep.
Greg Olsen has been banged up. He's got a foot injury. Didn't practice yesterday. He may or may not play, but they've got 4 tight ends they can go to. Homer, if he's healthy, is a good pass receiver out of the backfield. But Tyler Lockett underneath of the deep threat of DK Metcalf is where I think this could be another big Tyler Lockett game like he had 2 weeks ago in Arizona.
Greg Bell from the News Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter at GBellSeattle. Join me here on Sal Sports Live and the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. All right, on the defensive side, Greg, you know, are the numbers deceiving because teams are just having to play catch up and having to go to shootouts with them, or are they really struggling in some areas and that's where really maybe the Bills can make some moves here?
No, in some ways they're worse than their numbers defensively. Last week was the first week, Sal, that they had a defense show up at all, and that's because they blitzed, and they blitzed Bobby Wagner and Jimmy Garoppolo couldn't escape that blitz. I don't have to tell Bills fans, they are going to get a far different challenge in Josh Allen, who can run, who can extend plays, get outside, and has an arm that Jimmy Garoppolo does not. There is a much different challenge blitzing. If they want to blitz like they did last week, which I think they're going to, because Jamal Adams is going to play. He hasn't played in more than a month. And the thing he does best, I don't tell AFC East fans, the thing he does best is blitz. And that's what Seattle needs him to do. Seattle's front four has been awful for 2.5 years pressuring the quarterback. Their defensive line has just 7 sacks in 7 games, which is why they traded for Carlos Dunlap, who's going to make his Seattle debut on Sunday. Seattle, Pete Carroll doesn't want to blitz, but they've figured out the last few times they blitzed that that's the way to pressure, get any pressure to help the front four. I just think that blitzing Josh Allen is going to be a challenge for these guys. You saw early in the season how many big plays Buffalo had in the pass game deep down the field. Yep. And I think Buffalo is going to have chances for that again against the secondary that's given up huge plays, and that the only way to pressure quarterbacks is blitzing.
On Jamal Adams, do you think he'll be on a pitch count of some sort first game back, or do you expect him to really kind of just be out there regularly?
No, I think he will be. Carroll has even said, he usually doesn't say that stuff, but he's kind of intimated that Adams probably will be. They've found a couple defensive backs since he's been hurt, and Ryan Neal, who was a practice squad player who started 4 games, his first 4 games in the NFL career, and they really liked him at strong safety for Adams. You could see him staying in that position and maybe Adams getting fewer snaps than he normally would in the start. But Adams is the type of guy that once he's on the field, it's going to be hard to take him off. He's still trying to get the richest contract in the NFL for a safety and pass Buda Baker. His contract's up next year. I don't know how successful they're going to be to put him on the field and then try to get him off of it once he plays for the first time in a month. Expect Seattle to go more 5 and 6 defensive backs than they have when Adams was out. They did it in Atlanta in the opener, went a lot of dime, more than Pete Carroll's defenses like to. But they do that so they can free Adams into more of a freelancing, blitzing, roaming type of safety. If you're only going to play 4 defensive backs, it's risky to give up Adams blitzing as much. So expect to see Ryan Neal as a nickelback. And perhaps even if six defensive backs, if some of their banged up DJ Reed is banged up and there's a banged up secondary nickel guys, but if they can get some of those guys back healthy, you may see five and six defensive backs more than you normally would from Seattle, just so it frees Jamal Adams up in the sub packages to blitz more.
And on a play-to-play basis generally, are they more of a man team? Are they more of a zone team? What kind of zone do they play? And the biggest reason I ask is we've seen a shift in the way teams have played the Bills. The first 4 weeks, it was a lot of man, and the Bills crushed them. They really did. They just teams could not cover their group of receivers, and Josh really was doing a great job. But since teams have gone zone on them, the Bills have kind of struggled a little bit.
So you just define what Seattle's problem schematically, their decision is to make. Because if they blitz more, usually that means more man. Now, I know you can zone blitz, but they don't really want to take Carlos Dunlap and put him in the flat and drop off some of their edge pass rushers in zone blitzes. So if they do decide to blitz Wagner like they did last week against San Francisco, and Jamal Adams, as much as he likes the blitz and as good as he is at it, can they go man against Buffalo? Seattle's secondary, their cornerbacks have given up huge plays. Trey Flowers, Quentin Dunbar, Shaquille Griffin's probably not going to play because of concussion and hamstring, the Pro Bowl corner. So you're going to have Griffin and Flowers at your corners who have given up big plays all year. Part of the reason they went to more zone and dropping deeper in zones and less blitzing when Adams got hurt is because the Seahawks gave up 19 plays of 20 or more yards in the first four games. That's untenable. You can't do that and win games consistently. Since that time, they've dropped off and they haven't given up as many big plays in front of them. And teams have had to drive it down the field. Miami, for instance, five field goals because once the field got short in the red zone, they couldn't score touchdowns. I think because of how successful they were blitzing last week and because Jamal Adams is coming back, you're going to see more man than you've seen Seattle play in the last month. And I think that's a dangerous combination with Josh Allen and Buffalo's offense. You're right. It's counter to what teams have done the last few weeks against Buffalo to hold them down is to go man, but they have to pressure the quarterback. You'll see. When any quarterback gets 5 seconds to throw, he's going to beat any secondary. But you'll see stretches of this game, if they don't blitz, how much time Josh Allen has and how many plays he'll make.
And if they do play man, one of the things Josh will do is he'll run because guys' backs are turning to take off. And especially a Seahawks defense, like you said, if they're going to have linebackers on the field, they're not going to catch Josh Allen basically once he starts going.
They think they have a fast one rookie, first-round pick Jordan Brooks from Texas Tech that can run down most cornerbacks. He couldn't run down Kyler Murray, and there aren't a lot of people who can. But Josh Allen is of that ilk. I mean, he's maybe not as fast as Kyler Murray, but you're right. He's not a quarterback that you can really devote a spy to, nor would you want to, because he's not going to run him down anyway. That's what I mean off the top about how different this challenge is for Seattle. I think it's a dangerous challenge for them to blitz, frankly. Here on one hand, the only pressure they've been getting all year for 2 years is when they do blitz. But against Buffalo, if you blitz, you're in trouble to give up bigger plays that Allen can find you.
Well, you guys in Seattle are used to these high-scoring games and winning them. Well, we're not so much used to them. They did have one against the Rams this year that they won, but they have not played. I just went back and looked. The Bills played. That was their only game that even went into the 60s in three seasons. They hadn't had one since Sean McDermott really took over. 2017 was the first year, but 18 and 19, they didn't do it. So this is new territory for Bills fans. They're better equipped for it, but it kind of scares people to say, oh, my God, can we win a shootout here?
You're about to see another 30-30 game.
I agree.
I think it's going to be a 34-31, 31-35-30 type of game. That's the way Seattle's built right now. Russell Wilson to outscore everybody. And that's why they're 6-1 is because so far Wilson's been able to do that. The San Francisco game being the anomaly, they was 30-7 early in the fourth quarter before garbage time, three touchdowns in garbage time by Nick Mullins, the backup quarterback. Mm-hmm. Other than that, they have had to outscore everybody. And I think that's what's going to happen on Sunday.
All right, last thing before I let you go, I know you got some media duties. Anything on special teams we need to be aware of? There's a rookie kicker here in Buffalo, so we're always kind of thinking about that. But they also have one of the best, if not the best, return man in the game in Andre Roberts returning punts. So, you know, for the Bills, there is a little bit of a storyline on special teams. What about Seattle?
Seattle special teams, Sal, have really just come in very conservatively, secure possession. And you'll see Tyler Lockett get back and punt returns when the key situations of the game, simply to fair catch the ball and make sure he catches it or to make the right decision on when to let it bounce. Otherwise, David Moore is returning, the third wide receiver does their returns. But they really have not – they've de-emphasized trying to make big plays. They've done really well covering kicks. They have what I think is going to be an all-pro punter again this year in Michael Dixon. He was an all-pro as a rookie 2 years ago, and he's having an even better year this year. the stuff that Aussie can do with the ball, the way it bounces once it hit, it's amazing.
It is.
It's a really fun to watch. If punting's fun to watch, Michael Bennett or Michael Dixon makes it fun to watch. They haven't tried many field goals. I think it's four on the year by Jason Myers because their offense has been so successful in getting into the end zone instead. But a very conservative return game for Seattle. I wouldn't expect big plays there.
All right, Greg, listen, honestly, this was really good. Great insight. Really fun. I appreciate it. This was terrific. And are you flying in tomorrow or Saturday?
Yeah, I actually have to fly in tomorrow, Friday, because the state of New York's requiring I get a COVID test on Saturday.
Oh, there you go, man. What a New York.
Get this. I have to drive to Oswego to get a rapid result test.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the only one I could find. So I'm going to be spending I'm going to spend Saturday on the New York State Thruway driving to Oswego and back.
And as you know, this will be the first time that the Seahawks have played in this stadium since 2008, which is
It's the last stadium Russell Wilson's never played in beside the new ones.
He may go his entire career without ever playing actually in front of Bills fans, which is crazy. Toronto, right? I mean, if you count them, but you know, he'll come here with no fans allowed in the stadium. It's going to be another 8 years. I mean, he could still be playing, but it's going to be crazy. So, yeah, I wish the fans were here in Buffalo for this one. 70 degrees and sunny for a 6.
I know. And you have great fans. I used to be the Raiders beat writer for the Sacramento Bee. I've been to Rich Stadium. I love that place. I love how you drive a two-lane county road to get out there, and all of a sudden there's an NFL stadium.
It's great.
The pasture. I love the people out there, the passion. I grew up outside of Pittsburgh, so I have a respect for the blue-collar ethic of Western New York, and it is a shame that fans can't be there in a game like this. Should be a good one.
Well, Greg, safe travels here. Enjoy the weather. Enjoy the wings when you get.
I'm telling you, Sal, I am pumped about the weather, man. I'm going to Buffalo to get good weather.
I'm playing golf in Seattle. I'm playing golf in November in Buffalo, and then I might do it next week. It's going to be 71 on Monday and Tuesday still. Come on. Hey, man, thanks again. I really appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend here and safe travels.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Take care.
You're welcome. That is Greg Bell from the Tribune. What is it? The News Tribune. There you go. The News Tribune, Greg Bell. That was really good. That was great insight, by the way. Incredible. And I'm even more pumped for the Bills and what they might be able to do on offense. I mean, that was really cool how he explained what's going on in the Seattle secondary and how they're going to have to pick what they want to do against the Bills. If they want to play zone like other teams have and kind of held the Bills down a little bit, then, you know, they're going to be challenged in their own right doing that. But if they want to blitz, which is what made them a little better last week, they might have to play man to man and they could get really beat on that. So they're going to have to kind of really pick your poison, if you will, against the Bills. I'm just super excited after what I heard right there about maybe the chances of the Bills scoring a lot of points. I already thought they could get to the 30s. I think they can now, even more so after listening to Greg. That was really, really good. All right. Couple other things before I let you out of here. You heard Greg mention it. Pete Carroll, he coached in Buffalo in 1984. Bills were 2-14. They were bad, but it was the start of his NFL coaching career. There was a conference call we had with Pete earlier this week, and I was on. I said, "What'd you remember about coaching in Buffalo?" He said, "We lost a lot. You know, we were bad. Guys got fired, things like that." But he also mentioned, it was really interesting, it was just a really cool anecdote, that he said his first NFL game as a head coach was the Jets in 1994. And they won. They won here in Buffalo. And it was like, that was right after the Bills Super Bowl run. It was the first year they didn't go back to the Super Bowl. He said it was his most memorable win. You know, it was a regular season, I guess. He won a Super Bowl. His most memorable win as a head coach because of that, you know, getting his first win there. And he was also, you know, he said part of it was he was the defensive coordinator for the Jets for 4 years dealing with the K-gun and Jim Kelly's offense through all those Super Bowl years, which was pretty remarkable to think about, right? That he had to defend that. And then, you know, he won that game. He was really good to talk to. Pete Carroll was a lot of insight there. But as Greg was saying, you know, he also kind of tipped his hat a little bit, maybe saying, saying that maybe Jamal Adams will be on a pitch count when they play at the Bills. So it should be a really interesting game. Like I said, the over-under now is 57, 57 and a half. That is a very high over-under. And I think it could surpass that given the weather. It's going to be amazing weather here in Buffalo, which is going to be awesome. The Bills are not accustomed to this. Fans aren't having their team in a position to say, we're going to go in and we're going to win a high-scoring game. But I think that's exactly what the Bills have to do. I think the mistake could be made. I don't want the Bills to do this. I think a mistake could be made if the Bills say, we're just going to slow down the game. make the game shorter, I should say. Like to get them shorter. Speed up the game, I guess you'd say. We're going to make sure that we keep their offense off the field so that they can't strike, you know, and score a lot of points. We'll run the ball a lot. I think that's a mistake by the Bills. To me, the way to win this game is attack, attack, attack. Go through the air. Let Josh do what he did the first 4 weeks with a healthy Stephon Diggs and John Brown and Cole Beasley and Gabriel Davis, because John Brown now has been at practice the last two games, last two days. Today, I should say, he's been a full participant. He was not yesterday, but he was a full participant today. Injuries are a story for the Bills right now, though. Looks like they're not going to have Matt Milano. At least it's trending that way. I don't know what the situation is there. I have a feeling that we might not see Matt Milano for a while. Maybe they'll have to put him on IR because he only had 19 snaps against the Jets, 15 against the Patriots, and now he's back hurt again, missing practice because of the pec. That's a serious injury a lot of times. You don't know what's going to happen there. So the Matt Milano storyline is becoming bigger and bigger, especially because the Bills then also did sign Darren Lee from onto their practice squad. You wonder if something's going on there where they're getting him ready to maybe take that spot. I don't know. AJ Klein has not been a suitable replacement. We know that. I don't think this is the kind of game where AJ Klein is going to kill you, though. You know, the way that the Seahawks structure is in their offense, I don't think this is the kind of game where you're going to be worried about him necessarily having to cover guys. Yes, what Greg said, they are equipped to do a shorter passing game, but that's not really what they do. And they're not going to be a team that's going to really pound the ball at you time after time. So I don't think this is a game where it shows up like that. I'd like to see maybe Terrell Dodson get more of a chance and an opportunity as well, by the way, when he's healthy. He's not right now. I'd like to see that when he's healthy in place of Matt Milano. And then you think about Mitch Morse on the offensive line. Thankfully, the Bills do have John Feliciano back because Mitch Morse has not practiced a couple days in a row. He's still in the concussion protocol. So if you get John Feliciano at center, if that's where you want him, if you get Cody Ford back, he can play left guard. He has practiced this week. If Cody Ford doesn't play, maybe Feliciano stays at left guard. Maybe put Ryan Bates at center. There's some combinations there and some options there for the Bills and what they want to do. So, you know, we'll see where the Bills go with all of this. All right, tonight, Thursday night football, it is the Niners with a huge COVID list hosting the Green Bay Packers. I got to tell you guys, I don't know what happened in the NFL where we went from, hey, we got a few guys on the COVID list, so we got to change everybody's schedule, to suddenly, hey, we got everybody in the COVID list, but we're still going to play a game. I mean, come on. The NFL is clearly showing their hand here. And what they're doing is they're saying, hey, we don't really have enough room to move around all these games and these schedules and things like that. So you know what? We just have to get the games in. And that's what they're doing tonight. The San Francisco 49ers are totally underhanded in this game against the Green Bay Packers. But it's a larger point. It's the COVID point. It's the schedule point. It's what they're doing, you know, getting these games in, when just a few weeks ago we saw the Bills have a complete change of schedule over 2 weeks. We saw games postponed, games moved from one night to another, one day to another, from 1 week to another, teams moving their bye weeks just because there were three or four guys that had a COVID contact possibly. And now it's, hey, we're putting the entire offense on COVID, but yet we're still going to play a game. It just doesn't make sense to me. It does make sense because I know what they're doing, but it's not logical to keep doing that, right? It just doesn't make sense from a standpoint of, it's inconsistent, I guess I'd say. It's inconsistent with the message that the league wants to give, but we all see it. It's in plain sight why they're doing it this way. What is the, I don't even know what the line is tonight. I got to check on that. But either way, how can you not take the Packers, right? I mean, against this underhanded Niners group. Maybe the Niners come out and, hey, look, the Packers, they gave up a ton of running yards last week to Dalvin Cook and the Minnesota Vikings. So, you know, we'll see what the Niners can do, but it is going to be super interesting. All right, Bills, Seahawks, Sunday. Anything else I need to get to as far as I'm waiting on the Seahawks injury report. We don't have that right now. You heard Greg talk about their top three running backs all banged up right now. We'll see exactly who does play. We do know that it looks like Jamal Adams is going to play for Seattle in this game, and he's probably going to be on a pitch count. Like I said, the Bills, they started 4-0 against the division opponents after last week's win over the New England Patriots. That's the first time that's happened since 1991, so that's pretty cool. Also, here's something else. This is from Buffalo Bills PR. I'll read this to you. The Bills are one of only two teams, Atlanta is the other, to have at least 20 first downs in all 8 games this season. You think the offense isn't playing well? It actually is playing pretty well in a lot of metrics. They're just not scoring as much as they were early in the season. I think that could come again this weekend. With 20 or more first downs against Seattle, the Bills would tie the second longest streak in team history of 9 games, which is pretty crazy. So I don't think the offense played poorly at all last week. They just couldn't score points. You've got to get points against Seattle. You've got to get touchdowns. You can't settle for field goals. You can't trot Tyler Bass out there 8 times in this game. You got to make sure you get into the end zone. five or six times. That's what you got to do. Also, one other one, another great stat for the offense here. The Bills currently lead the NFL by converting 51.6% of third downs on offense through the first eight games. They're the number one team in the league on third down conversion percentage, and the Seattle Seahawks are last in the league at defending the pass. That's right, last, 357 yards a game given up. I think that's where the Bills win this game. I think the Bills need to be aggressive, need to attack, get into a high-scoring game. Don't be afraid of it. Let Josh cook. Not let Russ cook. Let Josh cook. That's what the Buffalo Bills need to do. Great insight from Greg Bell. I really appreciate him joining me on the program. I appreciate you watching. Maybe it was a distraction from all the election coverage. Maybe you needed something to just get away from all of that. So vote for Sal. I appreciate a vote for Sal right here on the program tonight. And, of course, on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast, if that's how you're listening in. So thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next Thursday at 7:30, hopefully back on schedule. But we'll see, because it is another West Coast team. So if their media is having the same, you know, types of issues as far as scheduling, I'll move it if I have to, just to make sure we can get somebody from the other team's media on. So we'll do that. But, you know, you'll see me on Thursday next week again. And then you'll hear me, of course, on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast and on Howard and Jeremy Friday morning. I'll be on tomorrow. I'm always on at 7 a.m. on Friday morning with them. So you can catch that. And of course, it's the Roundtable with Shope and the Bulldog. Here's something for you. Before I go, I got to let you know. So the Roundtable with Shope and the Bulldog, 5 to 6 on Friday this week, it's going to be streamed right here, just like this. Not on this page, the WGR Facebook page. You're going to see Bulldog. You're going to see Shope, and you're going to see me. Yes, I'm not kidding you. We're all going to be in our separate places. I'll be right here with this background behind me. You're going to see Shope at the studio. You're going to see Bulldog in his attic with his guitars. We're all going to be talking on the Roundtable, 5 to 6 on Friday. Thanks a lot for joining me here on Sal Sports Live.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule, automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX, because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com. An Autodesk company.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.